This is Mayo Clinic Radio, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. We'll take you beyond the headlines to explain what developments in medicine mean to you. Join the conversation by phone, Twitter, Facebook, or radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Welcome, everyone, to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Well, Tracy, nice to see you, as always.
Good to be here.
And I just have a question. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
I was halfway through a couple of eggs when I realized, oh, man, I should have had a green smoothie instead.
Oh,
I knew you were going to ask me that.
I thought you usually had yogurt or something healthy.
No, usually it's drinking green things from a glass. That's what I usually have.
You know, don't you wish that there was a way that you could eat healthy and it was easy?
Yeah, that makes it easier. That's true.
I think that's true for a lot of people. I mean, after all, two-thirds of us are overweight, one-third of us are obese, and most people would love to be thin, don't you think?
Just a little bit thinner. I could lose a few.
Yeah. Have you ever heard that quote, nothing tastes as good as being thin feels?
I have.
So being thin, losing weight, you know, it's really not all that complicated, which is interesting. You know, it's just a matter of calories in and calories out. There are really only two ways to shed a few pounds. Either you burn more calories or you eat less. And if you want to eat less or if you want to take in fewer calories, as long as you're going to do that, you might as well eat healthy.
Yeah, it's what the calories, you know, you get calories from cookies as well as from celery.
Exactly. But there are fewer calories in healthy food.
Right.
So you either burn more calories or you take in less. It really is that simple.
Yes. Today on Mayo Clinic Radio, we'll talk with dietitian Ms. Kate Zaratsky. We'll talk all about healthy eating, made easy. And we'll tell you how you can eat a more healthy diet without being a gourmet cook. It's easier than you think. We'll tell you why you ought to be thinking fruits and vegetables first when it comes to planning a meal. We'll talk about why protein is important and carbohydrates are not evil. We'll also talk about everything you need to know about fat, sugar, and salt, the three, well, delicious parts of our diet or the troublesome parts of our diet, depending on how you look at it. And we'll also outline a healthy eating plan that's as easy as eating ice cream. Are you serious?
I like it, don't you? So it's healthy eating made easy.
Yes.
I like it.
All right, very good. But first, summer is in full swing, and maybe, you know, at the first few weeks of summer, you're religiously putting on that sunscreen. Maybe you've already started to skip sunscreen every once in a while. Or maybe you're just trickling through the same bottle that you bought last year, the bottle of sunscreen that has been in your car for the last 365 days. That's not good either.
Well, you know, if you live in Minnesota, you haven't needed to think about sunscreen for a couple of weeks.
That's true. Joining us, dermatologist Dr. Mark Davis. Good morning, Dr. Davis.
Good morning,
Tracy. Well,
morning,
first,
Mark.
Yeah, we need
good
to talk morning, about sunscreen because it is so important, and explain to us why sunscreen is so important and what we've learned about it.
Well, first of all, we know that people are getting more and more sun exposure in the last few decades. It's become very fashionable to have a tan, to be out in the sun, to be out in the sun this summer, to have a tan skin. It was thought to look healthy. But what we also realize is that there's an explosion in the amount of skin cancers that people are developing, and the two have been linked. In other words, sun exposure is now completely understood to directly lead to skin cancer. Just like in the old days, we didn't know what caused lung cancer. We realized smoking caused lung cancer. Now we realize that too much sun exposure causes skin cancer.
It's become
increasingly recognized that we need to protect our skin from the sun so that we don't get skin cancer.
One of the things that has changed over the last 20 or 30 years is the number of sunscreens that you can choose from when you go to the store. It used to be that there was just tanning oil and that was about it. But now there's so many sunscreens, I don't even know where to start. What are some things we should look for when we're picking our sunscreens?
Well, the FDA have put in new regulations about sunscreens that have just come into action in the last few months. And they basically say that proper sunscreens need to be properly labeled, and they're actually monitoring it now. So that makes it much more easy. And I think we're going to see It's been much more easy to choose your sunscreen. Basically, you need to see a label saying broad protection against sun. You need to see that if you're going to be in water, you need to see that it's going to be water resistant. And it should be with an SPF between 30 and 50 if possible. And higher is fine too. Although there's some question about whether the higher ones, the ones that are labeled as higher than 50 are really that much better.
I was noticing yesterday, my kids are going to camp and I was trying to pick some sunscreens out for them. And I was noticing there are more SPF 30 than ever. There's not very many SPF 15s anymore.
Yeah, well, the FDA have actually come out and said that anybody that comes out with a sunscreen that has an SPF of less than of 15 or less cannot claim that they protect against the sun, because really that's not giving you adequate protection against the sun. SPF less than 15.
And when you say broad spectrum, you mean that this will protect against both UVA and UVB rays
that's
from the
correct.
Sun, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Up to just the last 3 or 4 years, any sunscreen just the only regulation was that it had to protect against UVB, which is the one that we get sunburned from. But now we've realized that a different wavelength called UVA also leads to skin cancer, and also is actually thought to be primarily causative in giving you wrinkling of the skin too. So now the FDA say you have to have your sunscreen must contain protection against both UVB and UVA.
And what about mineral versus non-mineral sunscreen? I know that's part of new FDA regulations. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, well, actually, that's a very interesting area. In general, the FDA don't really mind whether something is mineral or non-mineral. So the mineral ones are the ones containing titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. And they're the ones that leave you with often a kind of chalky white mark on your skin. And people don't really like those, but they're called physical sunscreens, and they're terrific. But a lot of people don't really like the appearance of them on the skin, which is why some of them are not very popular, although they're developing better ones regarding that. Then there's all the chemical sunscreens. And some people are saying that the chemical sunscreens, which are the non-mineral ones, have the potential for the chemicals can be absorbed and cause harmful side effects inside your body. But the bulk of research is not showing any definite damage from those chemical sunscreens. So basically the FDA has said, we don't really care whether you use the mineral one or the chemical sunscreens. You need to use sunscreen and apply it. And there's not enough evidence that either is harmful.
And I'm still suspicious of spray-on sunscreens. Are they okay?
Yeah. Basically, this is being evaluated by the FDA at the moment, but basically the feeling is that sprays are not great because, first of all, you get a very uneven spray when you spray on the skin. So one part of your skin might get lots of stuff from the spray and other parts won't. And the other worry is that when it becomes aerosolized, when you spray it, like if you're putting it on your kid and they are to turn around and then they inhale it, that can cause harmful side effects. So there's some movement, Sam, saying that sprays may not be acceptable in the future.
So your kid might get skin, you might not get skin cancer, but you made him sick.
You might make him sick from inhaling the spray.
Now, listen, I found out that I have been doing something wrong for many years, and that has to do with the care of the sunscreen and my car. You're not supposed to keep sunscreen in your car, are you?
Well, I don't know that there's that much regulation about it, but there is a concern that if you leave it in the car and it gets really hot and basically the chemicals may denature, and there's not clear guidelines about that, but basically you have to be careful about not having them in extreme temperatures because any solution can spoil if it's basically boiled, for example, in the car on a hot day.
So you have cleared up a lot of issues with regard to what kind of sunscreen to buy, and we appreciate that. But the other issue is how much to use. Isn't that a source of confusion? And most people do not use enough sunscreen, correct?
Absolutely, yes. If you're going to put it on your body, they say you need to have a golf ball size of sunscreen and put it on your body. And most people just put on tiny amounts. So, you know, when they were estimating all the SPF values of sunscreens, when you actually look at how they do them, they put on a very generous amount of sunscreen on all parts of the skin when they're doing those studies. But in practice, people put on maybe about a quarter of that amount. And that's why they're actually not really giving you the sun protection that they claim, because if you're not putting on enough of it, you're not getting that SPF value. So you really need to take a golf ball size on your palm and then get that all over your body. And that's thought to be about the amount that you need to put on. And it's, again, most people tend to use much less than that.
All right, SPF 30 or higher, and slop it on.
Exactly. So
all right.
Be generous.
And don't forget your ears. Yeah, don't forget your ears.
Yeah. Make sure you get behind your ears. No, put it on your ears, particularly the areas that are going to be out in the sun. And I think I tell my patients, you need to put it on first thing in the day before you even go out, so that and do it in front of a mirror so that you see that you're getting it on all the different parts of your skin. And then if you are out in the sun, you should need to reapply every 40 to 80 minutes is the guideline. So nearly every 1 to 2 hours, you need to be reapplying it to the areas that are out, that are exposed.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Davis. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right. Time for a short break. Coming up, Healthy Eating Made Easy with dietitian Ms. Katie Zaratsky. Plus, myth or matter of fact, mini meals throughout the day are better for losing weight than 3 large meals a day. Myth or matter of fact, we'll get the answer coming up.
I thought you said many meals. No, it's mini meals.
Mini meals.
Just
mini.
Right after the news at the bottom of the hour, we'll take your questions for our guest at 507-282-1234 or tweet us anytime at hashtag Mayo Clinic Radio. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Radio. Dr. Tom Shives along with Tracy McRae and this week's guest, dietitian Ms. Katie Zaratsky. Katie, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me this morning.
And such a great topic, healthy eating made easy. So the first question is, we all know that 2/3 of the population in America are overweight, and that includes a lot of children. What is wrong with our society? How did this happen?
Well, I think we're human is probably the first thing we could say about that is when we like palatable food, tasty food, and it doesn't take much but a walk around the corner or a short drive in your car to have access to it. And so tasty, easy to get food is all around us, and we end up eating more out of suggestion, like that tastes good, that looks good, that smells good, rather than, hey, I'm truly hungry.
Does it make a difference with the processed foods that are so easily available now as compared to a couple of generations ago, 1 or 2 generations when the woman, or mostly the woman of the house, had to cook the meals for the home? Does that make a difference?
Well, and I think with the processed foods, I think the idea that they're just so readily available,
sure,
and they're generally very sweet or very salty, and they just taste good. And so I think our palates have become accustomed to that type of food, and so we look for it, and it's easy to get.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but people also understand that being overweight is not healthy. And I think that most people really care about their health. So it's interesting that people don't work harder at staying thin, don't you think?
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with our lifestyle. And when we look at our lifestyles, I think we're all overscheduled and far too busy to take the time to cook or to take the time to move more. I think we hop in our car or we take some mode of transportation that doesn't allow us to move as much during the day, or we have jobs or things that have us sitting in front of computers. And so that imbalance of I'm not moving much, and then all I have to do is walk to the vending machine or go around the corner and there's a convenience store and I can grab a bag of potato chips or I can grab some sort of processed food that I like and that I've become accustomed to, that it just becomes a habit. And that habit is, you know, deeply ingrained in our lifestyle.
And how is our lifestyle different than it was before? I mean, food is food. They had the same things to eat, basically, except for all of the fast food that we have today. So is it more a problem of too many calories in or not enough calories expended, or is it both?
I think it's both. And I think when we look at our lifestyle, the lack or the of movement that we have, I think I've heard studies that say we burn about 150 less calories per day just through our jobs or our daily activities, because our world is so convenient that we don't necessarily have to move as much. We don't have to walk here or there. We can take elevators or escalators, or we can drive through to pick up food. We don't have to expend the energy. And when you look at 100 to 150 calories extra per day, whether that be from lack of exercise or movement, or say from the and on the food side of things, it's the portions. I mean, we eat a lot bigger portions. Our eyes have been trained to eat and appreciate a bigger portion. And so looking at those extra calories, just 100 extra calories in a mathematical equation puts on 10 pounds in a year. Now, most Americans aren't putting on 10 pounds mm-hmm. in a year, but when you see the weight creep, that little bit of weight that goes on year after year mm-hmm. after year, you can see where that little bit of if I moved a little bit more, or if I watched my portion and cutting back a few of those calories, it would probably help people be a little bit thinner or not take in so many calories.
You know, that is such an important point, because you figure that if you got your calculator over there, Rich, so you multiply 150 times 365, and what do you get? How many calories per pound? I mean, how many calories do you have to burn lose a pound?
So mathematically, it would be 3,500 calories
all right.
to
then
lose a pound.
You figure that out and then divide that by 3,500.
So he can't do this.
So it's basically 10 pounds.
Can't even find mine.
Right? It's 10 pounds?
Right. And I think, you know, when you do it mathematically, it is. It's about 10 pounds. But, you know, I always tell people our bodies aren't necessarily mathematical equations.
Sure.
You know, we don't fit into it that squarely.
So with the Healthy Living program where you are, I see you all the time over there now, it's a new program here at Mayo Clinic. What do you know now that you are teaching to the people who come as a dietitian? What do you know now to better help patients with their becoming better healthy eaters?
You know, the first thing I like to start out with is to ask people about their life and about their lifestyle, because I think right then and there, you get a grasp of where we can make some maybe small but impactful changes mm-hmm. in their day-to-day. And if it's sometimes, for some people, it's just a matter of being prepared when they walk out the door in the morning. If they're going to walk into a hectic, crazy day, it's being prepared for that by mm-hmm. having the right foods with you. Where other people might find it's an evening thing, you know, in mm-hmm. the evenings, you know what, the kitchen is three steps away and I've had a long day, or I'm bored, or whatever the case
be. The witching hour is 9 o'clock at night at my house. Mm-hmm. I just need to walk past the kitchen, do not even go in there, because I lose control of my mind when I go in the kitchen at 9 o'clock at night. You were talking about portion sizes and some of the things we know better now. The myth or matter of fact was that mini meals throughout the day are better for losing weight than three big meals a day. Is that a myth or is that a fact?
Well, and I think this speaks very well to someone's lifestyle. You know, when we look at if your lifestyle lends itself to three meals and they're good meals and satiating meals, and you're not looking for a snack then, and because snacks maybe bring you to the vending machine where you're mm-hmm. grabbing a candy bar, then that's probably the best situation for you. But if you're someone who maybe doesn't have 30 minutes to sit down for a meal, your lunch, or you're rushed, maybe more frequent small meals might be a better option for you.
Excellent. And you're also teaching people how to there's a big kitchen area over there, which I love, a classroom kitchen, I guess, and you're teaching people how to cook more healthfully. Where do you start in that area?
Well, I think when you're looking at cooking, and I think everyone has a different skill set here.
Sure.
One of our most popular classes we have is just simply being comfortable with a knife, holding a knife, and being able to chop up fruits and vegetables, and just building your confidence and your comfort level with mm-hmm. that. And mm-hmm. when we look at just, okay, if I can hold a knife and I can chop things up, well, then I just made it that much easier to incorporate fruits and vegetables into any dish that
yeah.
I make. And
I saw something once that said if you're willing to spend half an hour chopping once a week, what an impact that makes on your diet, because you can chop so many things that you then put in your fridge and have ready to go for snacks or meals or whatever throughout the course of the week. And it was just the gist of the article was the impact of half an hour of chopping. And that was an interesting way to look at it.
Right. And once you have those things chopped up and ready to go, it goes back to what we started the car conversation with. We eat out of convenience many times. So if you make the food in your kitchen and in around you convenient but healthy, mm-hmm. you're more likely to grab it and eat that rather than that short walk to the vending machine.
And you know, the corollary of what we just talked about, if you burn 300 calories five times a week, which really isn't too hard to do, that's a half hour on the elliptical or the treadmill, right? So that's 1,500 calories every week, and you multiply that by 52, and you divide that by 3,000. Think how much you lose a lot of weight, or weight that you don't. You take off a lot of weight just by exercising for 300 calories five times a week.
Right, and I think oftentimes you'll hear people say, "Well, I don't have the time to exercise," and so whether that be 20 minutes or 30 minutes at a shot, but is it, well, I do 10 minutes three times a day, or I find it on my break time or mm-hmm. my work time. And I think that's an interesting point too, because I think when we think about movement during the day or getting more exercise, we often think, oh, well, that'll harm our productivity, where I think some of our research at Mayo Clinic is saying otherwise. It actually makes you more productive.
If you look at also the parking spot, if you always are fighting for the closest parking spot to the grocery store or to Target or whatever, if you instead pick a spot that's farther away, you're squeezing extra steps in. We are so conditioned to keep circling and circling for that super close parking spot. Just park farther away, and that's where the pedometer comes in. When you can start monitoring those, is it 10,000 steps we should be doing?
Yep, 10,000 a day.
You know, the two worst inventions in America have been the garage door opener and the TV remote. I mean, just how many calories we used to burn doing just those things.
Oh, can I also say having a 9-year-old in the house, because they get to 10,000 steps before it's even lunchtime.
That's right. As long as you're chasing them around, you've got
it made. That's
true.
That's what I should do.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio. Our guest, Mayo dietitian Ms. Katie Zaratsky, coming up this week's Health and Medical News with Vivian Williams. Right after that, we'll be taking your phone calls, 507-282-1234. And we'll be giving away a few copies of the Mayo Clinic Diet Book. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. Men and women are different when it comes to some matters of heart health. Experts from Queen's University in Canada urge the use of gender-based treatment when it comes to dealing with cardiovascular risk factors related to diabetes. They say research shows women with type 2 diabetes and high cholesterol are less likely than their male peers to reach treatment goals to lower their bad cholesterol or LDL. They say their findings underscore the need to study gender differences to tailor drug interventions, and they say more women should be included in clinical trials. And now here's some information about a condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. Australian experts say young women with this disease have a slightly higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes, even if they're not overweight. They say type 2 diabetes and its complications are preventable, but only if people at risk of or who have diabetes are screened, aware, and take preventive action. They say their research highlights the need for greater awareness. Now, symptoms of PCOS can include irregular periods, weight gain, excessive facial hair, and acne. In other news, a gene known to control brain growth and development is heavily involved in promoting the most common form of kidney cancer. That's according to researchers from Mayo Clinic. Their study, published in Cancer Research, reveals that the gene NPTX2 plays an essential role in this cancer type, which is resistant to common chemotherapy and has a 5-year overall survival rate of less than 10% in patients with metastatic disease. Here's Dr. John Copland.
And we've silenced this gene and for the first time showed that it plays a role in cancer survival, proliferation or growth of the tumor, and also in the ability of the tumor to metastasize. And the next steps for this gene for us in our laboratory is to better understand its role in cancer biology, but importantly to try to develop drugs to block the signaling of this gene. And that's what we're working on feverishly right now.
And now, cell phones. They can tell a lot about you, including your microbiome. Now, your microbiome is the collection of microorganisms on you and your personal stuff. University of Oregon researchers checked out the connection between microbiomes and people's phones. 82% of the most common bacteria on fingers were also on the phones, so they're interested in the possibility of using your personal stuff as a way to monitor health and our contact with the environment. For example, to check to see if someone's carried a germ out of the hospital after a visit. And that's a look at headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. I'm Vivian Williams. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Welcome back. Information you want from specialists who know. This week's guest, a dietitian, Ms. Katie Zaratsky. So, Katie, we have figured out, with the help of a calculator, that if you exercise five times a week, burn 300 calories, you can lose a significant amount of weight in a year if you don't change your diet. So we know that exercise is important. Burning calories is important. Now we want to talk about how to eat healthy. But before we do that, I want to remind our audience that we're taking calls, 507-282-1234, and we have complimentary copies of the Mayo Clinic Diet Book, Eat Well, Enjoy Life, Lose Weight, Toss Out the Food Scales and the Calculators.
And how many of these do you have?
I think I have three.
All right, so give us a call.
And I think I have a couple of copies of the Mayo Clinic Clinic Diet Journal that goes along with that. 507-282-1234. Also, tweets at hashtag Mayo Radio.
Yes.
Hashtag Mayo Radio.
Mayo,
your
hashtag
tweets.
Mayo Clinic Radio. Yes. And we talked in the beginning about the first thing you should do is think fruits and vegetables first when you're planning your meal, not the protein. Not are we having chicken or fish. It's what fruit or vegetable are we going to have? That seems like a hard change to make.
That is. That goes against our kind of cultural norm, because we do. We think protein is kind of the mainstay of the meal. But really, when we think fruits and vegetables first, it really gets you in the mindset of most of my meal should be that. Mm-hmm. And when we think about fruits and vegetables first, they're not only very nutrient dense. So when you eat them, you get a wide variety of nutrients and antioxidants and fiber and things like that. But you also really look at, from the proportion of your meal, controlling your calories. And so if the most of your meal is more plant-based and more fruit and vegetable-based, you can eat a larger amount of those, feel very full and satisfied, get lots of nutrients without a lot of calories.
And there's some rumblings now. Has it officially been that you should have 7 fruits and vegetables a day? I'm starting to read that.
Right. And so for many years, there was a campaign about eat 5 a day, and there was some recent research that came out and said actually 7 fruits servings of fruits and vegetables per day is might be even better for us. And looking at with those 7, more fresh, frozen, fewer canned, but I think, you know, we can definitely still fit canned into our lifestyle, because I think it does give us a nice convenient option.
And because I have technically minded kids at my house, should it be 6 fruits and 1 vegetable? Or what is the breakdown that you recommend? Because they'd prefer to go as many fruits and as few vegetables as possible.
And with, again, being human, our palate has a tendency to prefer sweet, and fruits fit that bill. So I think most of us would, but truly, the vegetables, if you can work in more vegetables, and if you say, I have a lot of people say, well, I don't like vegetables. And maybe it's trying some of the sweeter vegetables or cooking them in a way that brings out some of their natural sweetness. So you have more vegetables or a higher proportion of vegetables.
Sure.
And that's also going to help keep the calories in check.
507-282-1234. If you would like a Mayo Clinic diet book, you have to call and ask us a question. And Carolyn was really willing and ready to take us up on her offer. Carolyn, welcome to the program. What is your question?
Do you have to be a male employee to use the Healthy Living weight loss area?
For the classes?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have to be a male employee?
You do not. There, the new Healthy Living program, which is an extension of the employee program, is available to any patient who would like to visit Mayo Clinic. And they have a website that you can visit, the Healthy Living Program, it's called. And there will be information there that you can look at about nutrition, fitness, resiliency, meaning stress management, and sleep and things along those lines.
And I'd say even in Rochester, a lot of the community education classes are some ones that can help you with cooking classes too.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're not in Rochester, check into your local community education classes, or even through your local hospital. Sometimes dietitians or chefs in the community will run classes that are centered around healthy cooking.
Carolyn, you hold on the line. We have a book for you, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks
a lot for your call. It's healthylivingprogram.org. Is that at the website?
I think it's a .com.
Audrey, check on that.
Yeah, Healthy Living Program.
Get back to us. Healthy Living Program. Well, Google.
Very good. Google it. You'll find it on Google.
Okay.
507-282-1234. Pat is on the line and has a question. Go right ahead, Pat.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
And thank you for your program. It really helps me every week.
Oh, well, thank you. Glad you're a loyal listener, Pat. It's good to hear from you.
Yes. It's good to talk to you, too.
What's your question?
The two questions I have is V8 juice. Now, that's easy to drink, you know, and just it's in the refrigerator, so you just get it out and drink it. And does it really have two servings of vegetables?
When it says that on the can, can you trust that that's true?
And it's an easy way to get the vegetables, isn't it, Pat? If, in fact, that's true, we're checking it out right
now. And a
lot
of salt. Yeah. I was going to throw that in there.
you can get the low salt.
Right.
Yes, you can.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And could have had a V8.
And you're right on, Pat. When you look for your vegetable juices, look for the ones that are lower in sodium. Mm-hmm. And juice can be part of a healthy diet. And vegetable juice is probably a better choice when you're watching your calories, because it will be a little bit lower in calories and you still will get some benefits of those vegetables. Now, it's not the same as a whole vegetable because you're missing some of the fiber and some of the other nutrients, but it is certainly a healthy thing to have in your diet.
The other question I had was frozen vegetables. Are they just as healthy as the ones you would chop up?
They are, Pat, and actually in some cases, frozen vegetables, due to when they are picked, they are picked at the peak of ripeness and then flash frozen or frozen very quickly, and so that is actually a nice preservative or a way of preserving the nutrition. Mm-hmm. And so frozen vegetables are an excellent and convenient way to get vegetables onto the table any time of the day.
Mm-hmm. And you could put those in soup too, couldn't you?
Yes, you can. And that's just it, working vegetables into other dishes, whether it be soup or casseroles or...
I like to roast them in the oven. Oh. Roasting frozen vegetables with some olive oil. It's great.
Oh. It's very tasty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Pat.
Thank you.
Hey, Pat, hang on. We've got a book for Pat,
yep.
don't we?
Yep. Hold on, Pat.
Yeah, you hang on and we'll send you the Mayo Clinic diet book.
Audrey will get your information and we'll send that out to you. Now, Mary Lou has one more question about vegetables. Good morning, Mary Lou. We have book. We have a book for you as well.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. I like the mixed vegetables, the frozen ones in particular. Then there's a number of vegetables in there. How many vegetables does that count with each serving?
That's great.
I think you're cheating, Mary Lou.
No, what size of cup should she be using to determine the serving?
Right. So, Mary Lou, if you want to pull out a measuring cup, a half a cup of cooked vegetables is considered a serving. So go ahead and eat more than one serving of vegetables. We all could use some more. But a half a cup of cooked vegetables is considered one serving. A full cup of raw is considered one serving.
Okay, thank you. Thanks,
so Mary Lou. Only have to eat 3.5 cups, Mary Lou, and you
yeah.
got it.
Well, hold on the line because we have a book for you too, Mary Lou. So Audrey, our producer, will be getting in touch with you to get your address. Let's go to a couple of the myth or matter of facts, because you did make me admit that I had some eggs for breakfast today, so I have to know. Are eggs bad for your heart? Is that a myth or is that a fact?
Eggs are a very nutritious food. Mm-hmm. And I think but eggs are very high in cholesterol, and I think that's where the confusion set sure. in many years ago when we started watching our cholesterol because of the increase in heart disease. And what we, I guess, have backpedaled a little bit and said, you know, if you're not at high heart risk, that having even an egg every day can be a nutritious part of your diet, because there are many good things to be had from eggs.
We had said that protein is important, and that's eggs. So how important is protein? How much do we need to be having each day?
So I think looking at protein as part of a meal is an important thing, because it offers a sense of satiety with that meal. And so if you're someone who's looking to eat three meals and not looking for a snack midday because those snacks might get you into trouble, having some protein so you feel full and stay feeling full is important. Now, getting into the specifics, you probably need, you know, maybe an ounce or two, maybe up to three or four, depending on your calorie needs. If people are wondering about their specific protein needs, it's for most healthy adults, it's about a half of about a half a gram per every pound of their body weight. So if you take your body weight and half it, that's about how many grams of protein you need in a day.
More math.
Are there any foods that actually will help you control your appetite?
Protein is one of them. And when we think about foods that do help with that, there's this concept called energy density. And so foods that have more water, because water is weight. And so you think about if you had a big glass of water, you would feel full. And so because your stomach senses that weight and sends that message to your brain. So fruits and vegetables fit that bill. Fiber is another one because fiber is bulky. And so it takes up space and it slows down our digestion a little bit. Protein, as we spoke about, is one that can also help with satiety. And probably the last one is fat, because fat slows down our digestion and gives us a sense of kind of fullness and satiety, and we like it because it tastes good. So it's kind of fits into our, again, being and human. We like to have that kind of...
The healthy fat is what you hear about.
Right.
So you got to make sure you're choosing the healthy fat and not the potato chips.
So things like apples, avocados, tomatoes, things like that might help control your appetite,
right?
Because they've got a lot of water content.
So when you think about, you know, Tracy talks about how she likes to eat her salads. And so the idea that if you have any variety of lettuces, but then putting other fruits and vegetables onto that salad, or if it's a casserole, but that same idea, the more water and the more fiber you can add into that dish, you're going to feel more full and probably fuller longer, and you also control the calories significantly.
Yeah, well, that can help.
507-282-1234. Susan is on the line with a question. Good morning, Susan.
Yes, I just got back from the farmer's market, and I love all the vegetables there. My question to you is this. I'm eating a lot of greens, and I'm having my helper cut them up. Is it necessary that I eat the stems? Am I losing nutrition by not having her save the stems and just eating the greens?
Depends on what stem it is.
Well, I'm talking about kale and collards, and we got Russian something. Several different.
There's so many things there.
Russian what, chard? Yes.
Yeah, they make great salads, but
and
what about...
also, like your carrots, is it necessary that you eat the greens at the top on your carrots? Am I losing food value?
Well, Susan, there's nutrients to be had there, and I guess that's where it comes down to a personal preference of do you like the texture and the taste. But most of those things, even the carrot tops, are very much edible. And so it might be that you look at the preparation technique. Maybe raw might be, for some of the stems, might be a little too tough or chewy. But
personally, what I was doing is I was having her cut the stems and take the leaves off, and then cut the stems in small pieces, and I was throwing them in soup.
Oh, sure.
Smart.
So that would be...
That's what I was doing previously.
And even if you strain it back out, Susan, because you don't necessarily like that texture in there, it would be a great flavor for the stock, and some of the water-soluble vitamins.
How about throwing it in a smoothie or something like that?
And that would work, too.
Yeah.
Yep. You got a lot of good ideas, Susan.
Well, yeah. I just wanted to confirm because I thought, well, maybe I'm throwing the stems out and they got a lot of nutrient in it that I shouldn't be doing.
She wants to get her money's worth at the farmer's market. I can appreciate that. Thanks, Susan.
Now, thank you. I've never eaten the top of a carrot. Have you?
Well, I suppose I never have, but you could chop it up and put it in a salad. That makes sense.
I didn't know that.
We need to talk about carbs, because for a while, carbs were like, you don't even breathe the name carbohydrates, but they're not all bad.
They're not. They're not all bad. And in fact, when we think about how our body functions, carbohydrates really are the preferred fuel for our brains and for our muscles. And so if we want to be on top of our game, both physically and mentally, carbohydrates are a necessity.
But they shouldn't be donuts. What should they be?
So that's where choice and making good choices is important. And I think when we think about carbohydrates, we often think about breads and pastas and rice and things along those lines. And let's face it, when most of us have a meal of pasta, that's what's on the plate. And so I think it's that a matter of watching the portion and balancing it with more of those fruits and vegetables.
How different is it if you do the wheat bread and wheat pasta and brown rice versus the white ones of those foods?
So when you're choosing the whole grains, you're getting a lot more fiber and a lot more kind of the food as it is real or in itself. And
sure.
So I think that you get more nutritional benefits that way. And so the closer you can get it to the real thing is always a better choice. And so getting your whole grains in, the recommendation is that you have at least 3 servings a day. And a serving would be just 1 slice of bread or a third to a half a cup of rice or pasta or something along those lines.
All right, myth or matter of fact, it's important to fast periodically to cleanse toxins from your body.
Well, in fasting, you know, it's kind of a hot topic right now, but the idea of it cleansing toxins, our bodies do a pretty good job of cleansing toxins already. You know, our kidneys and our liver, that's one of their most important jobs, and so we don't necessarily have to fast in order to clear our toxins, but some people choose to fast for cultural or religious reasons, and or even there was a study done where they did kind of what they called a 5-2 type fast where on certain days they ate a fewer amount of calories, only up to 500 calories on those days. And it had a fairly good outcome. But I think you have to look at it in terms of fasting, too. Other studies have shown that fasting and that lack of carbohydrate, because our brain runs on carbohydrate,
sure.
When people come off a fast, they often are looking for a quick kind of carbohydrate food, and oftentimes it's not a fruit or a whole grain.
Sure.
It's rather something like salty potato chips,
sure.
Or other kind of processed sweet dessert type foods. And so I think if people choose to fast, I think the important thing is coming off the fast or breaking the fast, looking at having healthy, nutritious carbohydrates readily available for you so you can kind of replenish.
You're saying that the human body is self-cleaning.
It is.
Yeah. So you don't need to any cleansing enemas. You don't need to fast. The body will actually take care of itself.
I think in probably the best, again, best medicine is eat well and drink enough water and your body will take care of itself.
I was just going to say, give us our final thought, and you just did. Drink lots of water. Very good. Thank you so much for your time.
And you know, the other thing that you say that I think is important, Katie, is that you don't have to be a gourmet cook in order to eat healthy.
No, you just have to look at the balance of what's on your plate. Enough fruits and vegetables and a little bit of protein and something starchy to keep you going.
All right. Thanks so much, Katie. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Coming up, we'll tell you about next week's program. Stay with us.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Welcome back. In a second, we'll tell you about next week's program. But Katie, before you go, tell us about your blog, because I know there's a lot of great nutrition information on there and hundreds of recipes. How do you get there?
Right. So out on mayoclinic.com or mayoclinic.org, they will get you to the same place. A bounty of nutrition as well as other health information available. The blog is Nutrition Wise, and I write it with my colleague Jennifer Nelson, and we cover a variety of topics, even topics that you might not think that are just nutrition related, but sleep and nutrition and how nutrition kind of integrates into all parts of our life.
And there's some recipes too. We've got some recipes that
I put on our
webpage, including the rainbow ice pops, which we're going to make next week. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thanks,
thank
Katie.
You. This is very fun.
Yep, great to have you here. All right, next week on Mayo Clinic Radio, you know it's a holiday weekend. And so it's a best of. We're going to repeat our program on organ transplantation, and you recall the Dr. Phil Fisher story, a Good Samaritan kidney donation to someone he didn't even know. It's a riveting, great story. And we're going to fortunately repeat it next week, and we hope you'll all be here.
For more information and topics discussed on this program, visit our website, including those recipes, radio.mayoclinic.org, where you'll get the podcast and the recipes, as well as previous episodes. Or you can go to mayoclinic.org, where over 3,000 physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to manage your health.
You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Our senior producer, Ron Petrovich, our associate producer and phone screener, Audrey Castletine, our technical director, Rich Peterson. Our theme music was written and performed by Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller. For Mayo Clinic Radio and Miss Katie Zaratsky, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McCrae.
Thanks for listening.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.